Everybody likes travel. Jerry loves when I do this. Everybody likes travel. But Jerry, you literally, I feel like you kind of just, you took 10 steps off the plane and sat down in front of your laptop to join us. You're just back from a trip, right?
Yeah, it's that kind of thing. And especially if it's, if you weren't working, you know, and I got to the computer a few times over the course of 7-8 days, but that was about it. I was totally kind of absorbed, if you will, with my grandson. So I promised all my grandson and my grandchildren that I would take them to whatever country they wanted to go to when they're 15. And so this is number two. Number one went to Japan with me a couple of years ago. Chris was on that trip as well.
That kid made the trip too. That was wonderful.
Wow. He had a great time.
Lucky grandchildren. This is a great deal.
Well, you know, I think every grandparent can do it. If they can't take them to any country they want to go to, and take them to the beach or take them to the something, you know, that kind of thing. But to spend 6-7 days with my 15-year-old grandson, who's a soccer fanatic, because I asked him, why did you choose England? He goes, well, you know, there's a game between Manchester City and Liverpool, and I'm a Liverpool fan. And I learned that he really is a Liverpool fan. He knows everything about every player, about, you know, how they got there, what they're doing, what Liverpool's all about. I mean,
he just doesn't have like FIFA on his Xbox or something?
Something in there. But every time I go over by his house, he's always watching a soccer game, something in Europe.
Is it FIFA?
Anyhow, we went to, on Sunday, we went to Manchester City versus Liverpool, which was a very big deal game. It ended up in a tie, but the stadium, which is nearly 100,000 people, there was no empty seats, and all of those seats did not cost a cheap $20 or $30. Let me tell you, it was a mortgage to get those seats with a little hospitality on the side kind of thing. And they were raving fans. I'm telling you, I learned something about the culture, of how literally I think the culture of that soccer team in support of Liverpool literally transformed the city and how the city operates today, because that soccer team is not just a bunch of blue-collar workers who are kicking the ball around. They've got some of the best players from everywhere in the world, every race, every color, every religion, and they made a decision that they're only going to play if there's inclusivity in the society in which they're in.
I didn't know that.
They step up, and they're stepping up for the entire soccer world, actually. Because there's problems with racism and a few other kinds of issues in terms of some of the soccer in some of the places. And these guys are incredible. 5 minutes was spent at the beginning of the game talking about justice, Black Lives Matter, violence, etc. That is, and what's acceptable, what's unacceptable, and you would be banned for life from the game.
Jerry, did they talk about faking violence as to incur a penalty or to throw the game?
Well,
did they hear about that?
Well, I will tell you that they did cart off two players during the game on a stretcher. So
they're probably just fine.
I think they're talking about different kinds of violence in the stands. And part of it is because they've been involved in over many years. There's been a couple incidents in which people at soccer games got killed and all that kind of stuff. So
that's unfortunate.
I just find it fascinating. I will, if I could share my screen. I don't know if I can share.
Yeah, probably not.
I don't know if I can share the photo. I have a photo. I'm going to see if, oh yeah, there it is. If you can see that.
Here we go. Let me turn that on for you.
Oh, wow.
That there are in the area around the stadium, different neighborhoods are supporting 19 right now, 19 different murals. Like this. This is one of them.
That's great.
We took a tour. The tour for Liverpool was to go to those 19 different murals, and you could see the kind of passion that's going on in this place. Just fascinating. Anyhow, I could go on and on, but that was that really was a learning experience for me that I did not know that I was going to get when I went there. So it was a little cool bonus.
Very nice. Well, look, the only violence we're going to have today, Natalia is going to kill it on this quick interview.
I'll take it.
Yeah. All right. Are you guys ready to get started?
You betcha. Yeah.
All right. Let's jump in.
Welcome to the CXR Channel, our premier podcast for talent acquisition and talent management. Listen in as the CXR community discusses a wide range of topics focused on attracting, engaging, and retaining the best talent. We're glad you're here.
All right, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Recruiting Community Podcast. I am your host today, Frodo, and I'm welcoming in Sam. How are you, Samwise?
Wonderful, Frodo. Life is good. Us hobbits are doing quite well.
Yeah, who's on the winning side of that one, Frodo and Sam? I don't know. Never really sure who's on the winning side of that. All right. Look, we got a lot of stuff to talk about today. I'm super excited. Telling a story of TA internally, I think, is a topic that comes up quite often within our community. And we're really looking forward to digging into that with DaVita's VP of Talent Acquisition, Natalia Wilson, who was just in. We're going to bring her back. But like data, performance transparency, incentives, aligning with business needs, all that good stuff. Nothing's left off the table. So we're going to talk about a few things really quickly, though, before we jump in. We are streaming on the YouTube, the Facebook. We're on the LinkedIn. We're trying to figure out how to get on the Blue Sky. So hang in there. If you're not on the Blue Sky, you should be on the Blue Sky. Check out the Blue Sky. CXR.works/podcast. That's where you're going to see past and future episodes. You can dive in and grab these. These usually take us about, for no other reason than we'll get to it, usually take about 3-4 days for us to get them out into like iTunes and Spotify and that sort of thing. But you can always check out, I think we're at 400 and something episodes. There's plenty of stuff for you. And then I think the last thing I'll call out really quickly before we do our housekeeping, Jerry, is it's ad-free. So this is a labor of love. You're not going to get 5 minutes of good stuff and 25 minutes of, you know, brought to you by. We just don't do that. It's a quick, easy conversation. If we've got a leader on here, if we bring a vendor and we bring them in, it's just simply because they're doing cool stuff and we want to shine a light on it. And we want people to see it. And then lastly, I'll take a breath here. If you are with us on LinkedIn where we're streaming live, we'd encourage you to use the chat. And we'll throw some stuff up on the screen. If you've got questions for Natalia today, or even Jerry or myself, drop those in there. If we don't get to them on the show today, we're happy to address those in the follow-up. So we'll make sure that we follow up with those. Jerry, what else? What should we talk about before we bring Natalia back in? The foundation, maybe?
Our foundation's good.
Foundation's good. If you're watching us on the Stairmaster, you can see in the bottom corner, we've got a little QR code if anybody wants to donate. I think we're in our third year founding the CXR Foundation. It's a 501c3 nonprofit. This last year, 2023, we just released the numbers, and I think we talked about it last week. We raised over $33,000 for scholarships. So 100% of that money goes into programs and scholarships. No board members are paid or compensated. But we've got things like the CXR Inspire Scholarship. We've got the Russ Mountain Scholarship. So all of this for continuing education for TA professionals and their family. We've done TA Talk Tank. Jerry's History of Recruiting, which Jerry, I just went through and did a massive revision to that over the weekend because we're shifting that over into a community model, which I'm excited about. More on that later. Jerry had a big part of that and drove that piece with how many other people, Jerry?
Basically one other, but then contributions from nearly 50, TA leaders all over the world.
Yeah. So if you've got something you think was impactful within, the industry of talent acquisition, that's the place to put it. Like we've started this repository. I don't know of another one like it anywhere. If there is, let us know. We're happy to link to it. But there's just, decades and decades and decades and decades all the way back to the late 1800s. of the history of recruiting and, you know, things that were going on in the world that impacted and things that recruiting impacted and that sort of thing. Cool. Yeah. Yeah, it is cool. It is cool. All right. So check that out. That's where those donations go. It helps to power that kind of stuff as well as the scholarships. All right. So with that, let's see. Where's my little button? There she is. Natalia, welcome back.
I'm excited to be here.
Let's get you over in the main screen. There we go. Much better. So Natalia, for those who may not have the pleasure of knowing or working with you, why don't you give us kind of an escalator pitch as to who you are and why should we be dialed in? What brings you to this crossroads today? Why should we be listening to you?
Happy to share. I have the privilege of leading our talent acquisition team at DaVita. I've been with DaVita for 11 years and have a little bit of a broad background. I started in finance, process improvement, and then about 5 years ago transitioned into our people space and have worn a number of different hats and joined our talent acquisition team when we were at an inflection point coming out of the pandemic. Hiring needs were actually double than what the team was built for. There was a ton of competition for talent, as many I'm sure listeners have experienced with their own teams. And we were experiencing that as a talent acquisition function as well. So had the privilege of working with the team to truly rebuild, grow the team capability and build trust with our partners. Far from perfect, but continuing to get better every day and really enjoy the work that we do. We are a healthcare organization first and foremost. And so we get the privilege of taking care of our patients by taking care of our teammates and bringing in amazing caregivers to the tune of about 20,000 teammates a year who we welcome to our organization.
Not a small number.
Not a small number. And in my opinion, that's what makes it incredibly fun and impactful, but also very challenging. We are hiring primarily patient care technicians, nurses, so individuals who are so critical to taking care of our patients and also individuals who are very in demand in the job market right now.
Nice. And Natalia, how big is the, just to put it in perspective for folks, how big is the DaVita recruiting team?
So our team is approximately 300 strong, and that includes mostly our talent acquisition partners or recruiters. And then we also have an amazing team that runs our operations, our talent acquisition operations, our onboarding processes, background checks, as well as a function internally for our marketing, employer brand capability. So really, really proud of the team that we have.
Yeah, I love you have an EB focus, EB team. That's wonderful.
Yes.
Yeah, a little near and dear to my heart.
Yes, so. I am incredibly, incredibly proud of that team. It's actually a newer capability for our organization about 2 years in and has delivered really tremendous value for our team.
Cool. Yeah, Natalia, you're a big data-based decision maker. Right.
Yes.
That team is not just kind of going, what are we going to run with today? Like there's some real work, right, that goes in that. So I guess we should just jump right in because we talk about telling the story, building trust through data. So I guess my first question for you is going to be around storytelling through data. If I guess, Natalia, in your experience, how can, and maybe not even just the DaVita TA teams, right, but broader TA teams even, effectively use data to tell a story within an organization? Do you have an example of maybe where data-driven storytelling really impacted the decision-making over there?
Yes, absolutely. I'll share actually a couple of examples. And yes, that data is very near and dear to my heart. Our team a few years ago was leveraging quite a few metrics, more traditional metrics, time to fill as an example, understanding our requisition load. And I mentioned we were at an inflection point. One way that our team used data to share the story was we were hitting a point of the team's capacity could not meet the organization's demand to hire. So the hiring needs were increasing and the team was budgeted for a certain size and a certain number of hires. And there was this tension point around our service delivery, our ability to meet those hiring needs was just not sufficient. So leveraging the data to say, look, this is the number of open requisitions we have. This is the number of hires we're expected to produce each month. This is the size of our team. And when we look at a range of what's a reasonable requisition load for a TA partner, that's no longer sustainable. Our team is actually about half the size versus this new demand that we have. So that enabled us to have a pretty significant investment in the team and in our organization to be able to meet the hiring demand. And we monitor our hiring demand in partnership with our finance team, in partnership with our operations team, on a very frequent basis to make sure that our team continues to be set up for success. So that's one example. And then another example, I know we've titled this building trust and talent acquisition. Again, at that inflection point, lots of noise, understandable noise and pain. At the end of the day, our ability to be successful as an organization is taking care of our patients. Yeah. So when we don't have a nurse, when we don't have a patient care technician, it's very serious and we take it very personally because it's our ability to provide life-saving care to our patients. And if we don't have reliable one source of truth data on the hires we're making, the teammates we're bringing in, that our partners, our operators can trust, we're falling apart. We're basically going back and forth and saying, my hiring needs aren't met. But if we don't have data to be able to say, what are the hiring needs? We're basically shooting in the dark to say, well, do we need to hire 5 people? Do we need to hire 10 people? So we have anchored on one source of truth of what we count as a hire, yep, as in someone who gets past background check, starts with our organization. And we compare our hires against our turnover, our terms, so that we have a good snapshot in time to understand, are we replacing, if we have someone exit or the organization, are we replacing them at an appropriate, timely rate? Are we hiring ahead, planning ahead, still building the workforce planning muscle? I would not say our workforce planning processes are perfect, so I don't want to oversell. And at the same time, having a common language with our partners, especially our operators, to be able to say, these are the hires we're making every month. These are the terms that we're experiencing. How are we evening out? We call it net hires. That has been a huge part of our journey so that we have a common language and the terminology. The metrics I'm looking at with my team are the same metrics we're looking at with our partners.
I love that. And you know what I love most about that too is you talked about the noise issue. There's a lot of conversation now about separating out the noise from the signal, if you will. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the challenges that keeps a lot of talent acquisition leaders up at night is trying to separate that out. So you're measuring what really counts for why you have a company. And obviously it's a little bit better with something in healthcare because you impact the lives so clearly in terms of what you do for your customers. And certainly that's very, very true at DaVita. I remember years ago reading a study, his name was Georgopoulos or something. And what he was doing was looking at the measure of what is the support staff that's needed in a hospital, mm-hmm, to ensure that you mitigate people dying in a hospital. And it was showing that, you know, you had to have a certain level of expertise and a quality of that expertise that could be measured. And if you didn't, you were seeing increased death as a result of that within the hospital that was unnecessary. And that, I think, must have galvanized the entire industry to rethink, you know, their investment in getting the right people hired in a reasonable period of time so that you could staff the organization.
Because you're essentially talking about getting the hiring to a level to deliver a quality of care.
Yes. Absolutely. Right?
Across the board and
absolutely
all of that.
Absolutely. And we have very strict parameters we follow around the staff that we need to keep our clinics healthy, operational, taking care of patients. And it's very, very critical for us to have great caregivers that are trained, that are able to take care of patients. It is just it's not negotiable for us. And as a result, the good news is we can work upstream to say, look, we know how long it takes us to find a candidate. We know how long it takes us to train a teammate. We have very intensive training programs. And so working backwards, we know how much lead time we need to hire ahead. We absolutely have to be in the business of hiring ahead.
Love so I love linking performance of the company to something that talent acquisition is doing. That is such a cool idea.
Well, I want to go back. There's a point you mentioned, Natalia, is figuring out if there's one question Jerry and I get asked consistently and repeatedly over and over, it's capacity and rec load. Mm-hmm. What should the average rec per recruiter be? How many recruiters should I have for this amount of hiring? That sort of thing. And our members, we got 130 some of my companies, members, yourself included, mm-hmm. are always wanting to do these benchmarks, and we're happy to do them. But one of the things that we continually push back on is the best place you can benchmark numbers like this is against yourself, because it's a very complex metric, right? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that go. We could have two identical companies, but their you know, number of hires or number of headcount, their processes could be very different. That sort of thing impacts it wildly. So you don't have to get into your math and your secret formula here, but where does DaVita go, or how does DaVita determine what that rec load should be? Like, how did you get to the methodology? How did you get to, I know we have this many recruiters, we should be able to knock out this many hires?
Yeah, I'm happy to share. We have some amazing leaders on the team who have a wealth of experience at DaVita, but also externally. Yep. So as a starting point, leverage them. There's one leader in particular who comes to mind, and she's taught me so much about our team, and she's just a veteran in the industry. And she actually was part of building that first model around here's the range that we think is reasonable. And there's some assumptions absolutely that go into it. For example, our team for the most part is full cycle recruiting. So our team does the sourcing, the scheduling for our highest volume roles. We also have a sourcing team I'm really excited about, but that's a newer capability for us. And so we had to account for that as part of our requisition range. And then we did benchmark. So to your point, Chris, I was really curious. We asked a number of organizations. I am 100% certain we bothered you as well and said, hey, what are some benchmarks? And we did some comparison, especially in the healthcare industry. We try to account for full cycle. And so that also gave us a little bit of a gut check to say, you know what, we're actually within range. There's levers we can pull to maybe increase that, or maybe yeah. there's circumstances or markets we're working in that are really competitive and our team has to do a lot more sourcing. And for example, where we actually would like to decrease that, but it gave us some confidence looking both internally as well as externally to say, okay, based on the process our team follows, the tools we have, the tools that we might not yet have in place, maybe around scheduling is still pretty manual for us. We're working on automating that. Okay. So that gave us a chance to say, look, this is a range, and we use a range. We don't use one point number intentionally. Also knowing that we operate across the US, and again, some markets are more challenging than others.
Yeah, we have a fantastic capacity model worksheet that was shared by one of our member companies. There's actually a few of them, but one really stands out, and that it allows that flexibility a little bit, right? It's not saying this is the iron rule. It's saying that this is that model, and you're going to have to flex a little bit because it does.
Absolutely. And we're also triangulating that with hires. So in addition to requisitions per TA partner, we're also looking at how many hires per week, per month, would we expect for particular roles from a TA partner. And that helps us also do a gut check as well, just to make sure that, again, we're not expecting something absolutely unreasonable, especially in a tough market, but also at the same time that we're pushing ourselves to improve and we're pushing ourselves to be more efficient and more effective.
Yeah. And if it's been a weird space in recruiting, it's been doubly weird in healthcare and recruiting, like for the last few years. Mm-hmm. But that brings us back to, like, from a performance perspective, right? Because you can have all the numbers in the world, but if you're not mm-hmm. managing to the performance levels that you need in order to hit those, you know, the meat in the seat, right, to bring in that talent, to get those people there. So I guess my question for you, Natalia, is, like, how do you at DaVita perform? How do you deal with performance transparency on your TA team? Are there benefits you've seen from sort of being open about TA outcomes? Are there challenges sort of you face in that area from a performance transparency standpoint?
I think it's been helpful to be transparent. There is some double-edged sword to basically opening up at the books and saying, here's how we're doing. But I think it's been helpful because it's given us, one, a common language with partners. We do, for our high volume roles, we do set hiring targets with our partners at a month level interval. So we get a sense of how are we doing against those hiring targets and what are the barriers. Sometimes it might be us. Sometimes we have applicant flow challenges. Sometimes we run into process challenges on the operations side. And so how do we basically overcome those challenges and make sure we can say, look, we're doing everything we can at the end of the day to ensure that our teams are staffed and we can take care of patients. And for our team internally, we've also set expectations around what we expect in terms of number of hires on a quarterly basis. We have an incentive plan that's associated with those hires. So that way, at the end of the day, we're all rowing in the same direction. We're all targeting to make sure that we are driving quality hires to the organization and that we're essentially keeping our teams healthy and staffed. So it's been helpful to have a common language and to be transparent, so everyone has a similar set of expectations. Yeah. And I would say there's also a spotlight on our team. And so that's a little bit of the double-edged sword, is that it's very clear how we're doing. And then if we're not hitting the target we're expecting, then we have to start to root cause and say, okay, why is that? What does our applicant flow look like? How many offers are we making? Are we getting stuck? Is it taking us longer to get a candidate through with the hiring manager, and really unpack what the root cause is when we're not hitting the mark?
And with the size of your organization too, you have a little bit of a brain trust from all of the people at all of the levels, from, you know, the trench recruiter to your team leaders and others who have a ramp to want to be participating more in leadership roles. And it seems to me that the transparency allows for them, if there's expectation, to be heard about what they think. So if they know something about turnover and retention and the issues that keep people up at night relative to those things, they impact obviously how many people you need to hire, because you're going to have to replace as well as grow. And so knowing that, you get them to take more responsibility in terms of offering their ideas and suggestions about how we can solve some other problems.
Absolutely. There's no other way for us to know if, for example, let's say we're not hitting a hiring target. Let's say we're not making the hires we're expecting to. At the end of the day, the teammate that's going to know that is our talent acquisition partner. They will know, they'll be able to communicate and say, you know what, gosh, I'm working my butt off and I'm not finding the nurses. We have an applicant flow challenge. So we need to pull in marketing resources. We need to pull in branding resources. Or, you know what, I actually have a lot of candidates I'm excited about, but maybe we have a vacancy in a clinic and all of a sudden we're not moving candidates through to a hiring manager as quickly as we need to, and we're losing them. So those are just a couple of examples, but I can't agree more with you, Jerry. At the end of the day, our talent acquisition partners have the knowledge and so are so critical in helping us unpack some of these problems.
Great. Yeah, I think that comes back to the data, right? Because so you start, you know, we talk about storytelling through that data piece, which I want to come back to as we wrap it up. But you're also talking about that performance transparency. And then, as you mentioned, I think, Natalia, you're diving into, we didn't really have a question about it, but you're diving into aligning those incentives with the business and communicating back to the business what's working and ideally, obviously, what's not working. But take us back to the communication part, right? The storytelling part, because I think this is vital. Is communicating the success as well as you mentioned, as well as those challenges you may be running into. So, Natalia, how do you communicate TA's successes or those challenges to the broader organization? And if you've got that sort of in mind, as you kind of cue that up in your brain, are there tips for maintaining that rhythm or that level of support or that understanding across the different departments? Because you're not small potatoes. So there's a lot to unpack with that data.
So we have quite a bit of alignment with our operations teams and our operations leaders, including some just standing time and check-ins, whether quarterly or monthly, with our operations leaders, including our COO. And I do think it's important to tailor messaging to the culture of the organization. DaVita is a very balanced, highly accountable organization. And so, in my opinion, to communicate success, at least at DaVita, I think it's helpful to be balanced. It's helpful to say, look, these are the things that are going well. We're really excited about. We've made a lot of progress, let's say, in a really challenging market or a market that was maybe underserved, now is much more fully staffed. We have the right teammate population there. And then also to balance that with, and these are the opportunities we're still working on. This is still the feedback we're hearing maybe in a different market or an area of the team we're still working on improving or really strengthening. And then this is our focus for the next 6 months or the next year. And so that's the recipe so to speak, that seems to work well for us. And again, every organization might have slightly different ways of communicating or preferences. But I found that's helpful to be transparent, to say these are the things we're really proud of and excited about and the milestones we've hit, as well as this is our focus going forward, and to stay balanced. Because I don't think anything is worse than folks being surprised and saying, you know, hey, you're telling me everything is sunshine and roses. And then I am talking to a team in a particular market or a particular state, and they're telling me they're having a really, really hard time with staffing. So I find it's helpful to be balanced.
Yeah, and that builds that trust then with across those different boundaries. I think that's powerful.
Well, and that flexibility too. I love that your leadership style is not that rigidity, right? That it's this way, this way, this way. You're taking into account that each of those business units or lines of business operate slightly differently. And you've certainly got to account for those. So I applaud that. So Natalia, we asked this of all of our guests before we wrap up. If you were going to write a book about this topic, if you're going to write a book about your approach, your leadership style on this topic, what would you title the book?
That is a great question. I think I would title it Creating Space. And what I mean by that, what I've been very humbled in this role, it's one of the many things that make this role very fulfilling for me, is creating space to really hear your partner's needs, your leader's needs, and most importantly, your team's needs. That's been perhaps the biggest learning opportunity for me, and one of the biggest drivers of our journey and coming from a place of really needing to make pretty big changes on our team and to really address the hiring needs that we had. Creating the space to hear all of the constituents, all of the stakeholders, and then to take action, that's been incredibly helpful for me. And as I think about leadership in general, I think creating the space to hear and to listen before taking action, before jumping in, before saying, hey, yep, I have the solution, that has been incredibly helpful for me.
I love that. Yeah, just creating space by itself is one thing. But then as you go in to explain that, it really strikes me that your leadership style is one of empathy and really listening. And I absolutely applaud that. I love that.
Oh, thank you. Right? That's kind.
So Natalia, here's the curveball for you. Now, present company excluded, who gets the first signed copy of Creating Space?
Oh, my goodness. You know, I would say my husband. I didn't share as much on the personal side when I did my intro, but my husband has been along for my entire career journey, many, many years in the making, and he's been a huge advocate and partner, and he's been on the receiving end of hearing all of the good, the bad, the ugly stories, right, day to day, as many partners do. So I would go with my husband, Dave.
I love it. Well, look, much gratitude, Natalia. You're super busy. You've got an amazing team that we are fortunate enough to get to work with quite regularly. So we're really appreciative of you cutting time out for the show today. We appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been an absolute honor.
Good stuff. Well, look, before we wrap up, I'll just remind everybody, CXR.foundation for the nonprofit. If you're interested in being part of that, I believe we have an open board seat. So if anybody's interested, they might want to check that out. And you can, of course, donate to that. Again, no money goes to the board. All that goes into programs. And then I'll remind everybody, CXR.works to learn more about the community, and .work/podcast. We try to keep it simple for any future and past episodes. You can check those out. And with that, we're going to say thank you, everybody. And we will see you next week, same bat time, same bat channel. Sam, tell everybody goodbye.
Goodbye.
Yeah. All right, thanks, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the CXR channel. Please subscribe to CXR on your favorite podcast resource and leave us a review while you're at it. Learn more about CXR at our website, cxr.works, facebook.com and twitter.com/careercrossroads, and on Instagram @careerxroads. We'll catch you next time.